All right, well, welcome to Wesley's Own Words, where we are looking at the original works and writings of John Wesley, especially those that play an important role and were kind of seminal in the formation of the Methodist movement as we know it today. And we're going to start off in a very logical place, which is one of his very earliest writings about the nature of what he was attempting to do in the Methodist movement, he and his brother Charles specifically. And that is the nature, design, and general rules of our united societies. Before we were known as Methodists, which were originally kind of a term of derision, almost a slang, a negative connotation slang term that later we went on to just adopt, Wesley originally called us the United Societies. And early on in 1743, he wrote down this letter that eventually became a pamphlet. That was a kind of big thing at the time in that kind of mid-17th century was this idea of a pamphlet. Wesley wrote a lot of them, and he would take some of his more important writings and especially longer letters or whatever and turn them into pamphlets that could be purchased relatively easily and cheaply. This was kind of new as a way of getting some important information into the hands of any and everybody who wanted it. So you could imagine if you were invited to attend some kind of West Methodist gathering, that these little pamphlets would be on offer as a way of explaining who Methodists were and what their intentions and purpose were. As we go through all of these, it's important to remember that Wesley did not set out to build a church. He did not set out to build a denomination or anything like it. He was trying to build a movement amongst people who wanted to live in what he thought was a more faithful way and a more intentional way. And we'll kind of see as we go through this what that means. Now, today we're just going to look at the first three paragraphs of this writing. And it begins with a salutation, kind of like a letter almost, where Wesley just kind of helps us understand what it is that is happening here. And so Wesley writes, in the latter end of the year 1739, so a couple years before, 8 or 10 persons came to me in London who appeared to be deeply convinced of sin and earnestly groaning for redemption. They desired, as did 2 or 3 more the next day, that I would spend some time with them in prayer and advise them in how to flee from the wrath to come. What a good phrase, which they saw continually hanging over their heads. That I might have more time for this great work, I appointed a day when they might all come together, which from thenceforth we did every week, namely on Thursday in the evening. To these, and as many more as desired to join with them, for their number increased daily, I gave those advice from time to time which I judged most needful for them, and they always concluded their meetings with prayer suited to their several necessities. Whew. John is, of course, writing at his time, and while in the mid-1700s they did, in fact, speak English, not only are they speaking British English, but they're speaking 300-year-old British English, and if you didn't quite follow along with the text on the screen or with my reading, it wasn't abundantly clear. This is mostly all one sentence, because John loves a run-on sentence. But as we look through this particular first paragraph, a couple things that I want to point out. One, this is the beginning of Methodism, and people are coming to John. This is 1739, again, is the time he's writing about. They're coming to John because they think he is somebody who can help them. And John, about 10 years earlier, started what is best known as, kind of think of as like a college ministry when he was at Oxford, where they met in the upper room and a group of college students when John was attending there to pray for each other and to help each other learn and develop in their faith. And John then went off. He has spent a little time as a missionary in Georgia, which went incredibly poorly. Maybe that'll come up again later. I don't know. And then came back, kind of tail between his legs, to London, and back to Oxford, where he again began to meet with a group of people, more than anything, just figure out what was going on with him and where he wanted to go next. But through those meetings, he had a bit of a spiritual awakening of his own, was sort of living through that spiritual awakening. Other people noticed it. Other people noticed the way in which he talked and spoke and taught, and decided that they wanted to learn specifically from him. So a small group in the beginning, though John mentions in this, that grew on an almost daily basis, came to him, seeing him as someone who's on a spiritual path of development, and wanting to do the same. So they came and sought him out. And he talks about them being appeared to be deeply convinced of sin, this idea that we can do wrong, right? They are convinced of this idea that human beings are not perfect, that we can hurt each other, we can hurt ourselves, we can live in ways other than how, you know, God would really want us to, we can live in ways other than prioritizing loving God, loving neighbor, and loving ourselves, which is something we talk about around here quite a bit. So they were convinced that this was them, and that they were struggling in these ways, and they earnestly wanted to live differently. Which says they earnestly groaning for redemption. That's what he means. He realizes they want to live differently. And so he thought the best way to do that is, you know, for them to spend time together and help figure out how they all together might flee from the wrath to come. Now, important thing here is when we hear that language, first of all, it's very loaded language because John loves loaded language. We may want to read into that ideas of, you know, Christ's second coming and the end of the world and the rapture and all that sort of stuff. That really wouldn't be a strong part, really any big part of Christian thinking or identity for another 100 years. It wasn't until the mid-1800s that whole idea and that whole reading of like the book of Revelations and all that would come back around. So they're not talking about that generally or likely. They are talking more about, you know, this idea of God's wrath that is hanging over their heads. And you know, wrath is interesting. And I don't have time to unpack that whole word. But one way we understand the idea of God's wrath, it means that there are consequences, right? I mean, or we feel it, like we can feel inside of us when we know we are not doing what we ought to do. What call it? You know, we may kind of tamp it down by calling it a guilty conscience. Right. So these folks are obviously recognizing that they're living in ways other than they ought to be living. They're feeling bad. Maybe they have a guilty conscience about it. And John is choosing to call that and summarize that as, quote unquote, God's wrath. But, you know, it means that somehow they are feeling the consequences of not living in the way that they should, you know, probably inside of themselves on a regular basis, that they're feeling the guilt and shame that can come along with that. And they don't want to do that anymore. Right? They want to live better. They want to live free of all of that. And so he offers them an opportunity to do so by meeting together weekly. This is not a one and done. John doesn't give them the magic prescription, says, we'll just believe these things or think these things or pray this prayer and everything will be magically better. He recognizes that, you know, the journey that these folks are on is the same journey that he is on, and that to get where they want to go is going to take time. And in fact, not just one, but regular meetings and regular support where they regularly support each other on a regular basis. So that's what they do. They gather together on a weekly basis. Everyone's expected to be there, you know, as much as possible. This apparently attracted the attention of other people who chose to came with them. And they, of course, he gave them advice from time to time, which he judged as most needful for them. And then it says they end their meeting with prayer suited to their several necessities. So John is teaching them and helping giving them advice based on what it is they say they're actually struggling with, what the concerns and problems they're actually having are, and then they're in prayer with each other about what's actually going on in their actual lives. This isn't John coming in as a learned person and saying, I already know what you need and I'm just going to tell you, right? in order for him to be able to advise them, he has to first listen and know what their needs are. And he does that. And I think that part is amazing. And where we get this idea that Methodism, first and foremost, is very pragmatic and it's very meet people where they are. Right. So right from the beginning, we have this example from John where he is meeting these folks where they are based on what they say their problems are, what they say their challenges are, and what their needs are. And he's not really even judging them for wherever that is. There's nothing in there that says he judges them for them. He just says, oh, you are talking about this. You are talking about this challenge you're having here, the struggle you're having over here. We're going to focus on that. Not just what I think as, you know, as John Wesley, as the leader, whatever, is important. I'm going to listen to you and listen to what you are important. And then we're going to be in prayer for each other. And we're going to do that based again on what your needs actually are. So that's first paragraph. Second paragraph, this was the rise of the United Society, first in Europe and then in America. Such a society is no other than, quote, a company of men, people, having the form and seeking the power of godliness, united in order to pray together, to receive the word of exhortation, and to watch over one another in love, that we may help each other to work out their salvation. United Society, again, that name for Methodism before we were called Methodists, has no other, such society is no other than. And then he goes on to say what they are. And of course, they are talking about the purpose. And their purpose is to unite together, to pray together, to encourage each other, and to help each other work out their salvations. He's saying, first and foremost, what makes Methodism is our mission, is our purpose, is our reason for being, our why. That is the most important thing. When we meet, where we meet, how we meet, all of that. It's not that it doesn't matter, but it's not the most important thing. That the most important thing that makes us us is our intention, our purpose, what we are trying to do. And of course, what we are trying to do is live godly lives, live in the way that God would want us to live. And we do that by working together and by praying together to receive the word of exhortation. Exhortation is a great word. Kind of a synonym for exhortation would be encouragement, but it's like encouragement on steroids, right? When you exhort somebody, you're not just encouraging them like, oh, good job, honey. We love you. It is much more than that, much more intentional than that, much deeper than that. And so that's why John Wesley uses that word, exhortation, over kind of a softer word like encouragement. No, we are here to really listen to one another and then help people hear what we heard from them and encourage them, but more than just encourage them, but encourage them with great intention. And of course, watch over each other in love. Everything we do is in love. And we are to do this together. Right? The Methodism isn't Methodism unless we're doing it together, unless we're practicing it together in big or small groups, however we're doing it. It's not that. And then, of course, it ends with, so that we may help each other work out their salvation. We do this together, but at the end of the day, our faith and our life and who we are is eventually up to us. Is that we can be around other people who we look up to, who we admire. We can try to do all of the things that we are called to do. We can learn from those great people who have gone before us. But if we ourselves, you know, at the end of the day, it will come down to us. You know, we have to choose at the end of the day what we believe. It's all well and good what our neighbor believes and all well and good what, you know, they have faith in. It does, at the end of the day, come down to us. We are meant to work out our own salvation, which is to say we need to work out for ourselves what it is we believe about ourselves, what we believe about God, what we believe about our relationship to God through Christ and the Holy Spirit. You know, nobody can believe on our behalf, right? We have to do that work, but the best way we can do that work is with each other, supported by each other, encouraged by each other, you know, being able to help each other grow as it is. And then finally, the final paragraph I want to look at today is paragraph 3. And this is sort of the end of the introduction. So this is all just Wesley introduction, getting, you know, kind of the basics out of the way first, and some of the logistics of it. So we've learned that we are a movement that's not very old. We are a movement based around at this point in history, we're not very old. We're about 300 years old now, but you know, this time we're not very old. But we're to do that. We're to work together. We're to support each other. We are to encourage each other. We should look over each other in love. And then finally, the really real pragmatist in John comes out and he says this, that it may be more easily be discerned whether they are indeed working out their own salvation. Each society is divided into smaller companies called classes, according to their respective places of abode. Abode, good word, abode. There are about 12 persons in a class, one of whom is styled the leader. It is his duty, or her, to see each person in his class once a week, at least, in order, one, to inquire how their souls prosper, two, to advise, reprove, comfort, or exhort, as occasion may require, three, to receive that which they are willing to give towards the relief of preachers, church, and the poor. And then two, to meet ministers and the stewards of the society once a week in order, one, to inform the minister of any that are sick, or two, or of any that walk disorderly and will not be reproved, and then two, to pay the stewards what they have received from their several classes in the week preceding. So if you are going to practice at this point in the Methodist tradition as a United Society, there were probably big group meetings, but then, you know, there were smaller meetings of no more than about 12 people. And if it got too big, they would divide themselves in half. And that is where you would get the real meat. That's where you could actually be in that smaller group. You actually could be in conversation with each other. You could learn from each other. You could ask questions of each other. You could really support each other in how you're doing in a way that you can't do in a larger group. And there's a leader there to make sure that no one's monopolizing too much time and that everybody gets an opportunity to share and be heard. Now, a couple of important notes. It says that they are going to be organized in a particular way. This is why I actually wanted to read this chapter or this paragraph. I almost skipped it. But it's important to recognize that they are being organized by their respective places of abode, basically where they live. And unlike today, where you've got people very, very segregated into different neighborhoods, that didn't used to be the way that it was. You couldn't really do that before there were cars and buses and trains and all that. And in John Wesley's time, there were none of those things. Servants would live very, very close to the people they served. Sometimes they would live in the same home. They would either maybe live all the way in the attic where it was unbearably hot, or all the way in the basement where it was unbearably cold, or whatever, or in tiny little houses, or apartment blocks right next to the very large houses that the rich and important people were in. And the factory workers and the factory owners all lived very close to the factory, all lived similar to each other. So if you organize people geographically, you're going to break down a lot of the economic barriers that usually keep people apart. And these same folks, who may be even living in the same physical space, may on Sunday mornings walk out the door with one going left to, the church where all the rich people go, and the other one's going right to the church where all the poor people go. It could really be that stark. So by organizing people by nothing other than where it is that they happened to live, and giving no other criteria and not really allowing any other criteria to make that determination, you will find yourself in one of these class meetings doing, as you can imagine, some fairly personal sharing about your salvation and where you're at and the struggles you're having across a lot of dividing lines that would have existed in the society at the time. And this is one of those ways that John is creating, and his brother Charles, but the Wesleys are creating a very different expression of faith and faith community than would have been found in the churches the churches in general. And then, of course, they took an offering because, none of this stuff is free. I have no problem, I've said multiple times, asking people for money for the life of the church because I believe in what the church does. And nothing really happens for free. Even in a upstart renewal movement like Wesley's trying to found through the Methodists, there are people who need to be supported. There are people going around preaching to all these different societies and them. But there's also the work of the church and the work with the poor and the mission. They did a lot of work with prisoners at this time. And so that needs to be supported as well. And so they would. And because Methodists did not meet at Sunday mornings for their own unique worship. They went to church with everybody else in the same Church of England church as everybody else went to. So, you know, the class meetings, these smaller meetings, were the places they had the opportunity basically to pass the plate, take up an offering, take up a collection to support the work of Methodism in general. All right, so these are the first three paragraphs of the nature, design, and general rules of our United Societies. A lot of times these can seem a bit interminable just because of the it's English, but it's not really, and it's kind of old, and you know it's written for a time other than now. But similar to how we approach Scripture, there is an opportunity to learn from it, and they're still considered, and this is still considered authoritative for us today. You will find it at the front of the Book of Discipline at the United Methodist Church and other Methodist traditions, and we still look at this particular document in particular and say, you know, this really encapsulates John Wesley's intention for us, that we are a movement defined, and we are a group, even today, 300 years later, we are still a group defined by our purpose to help each other, you know, work out our salvation, to help each other live more faithful lives, to help each other learn to love God, love neighbor, and love ourselves a little bit more. And so long as we are doing that and prioritizing that, then we are Methodists in the way that Wesley is looking for us to be Methodists. Okay, I hope this was helpful to you. We're going to be going through this particular document again, a couple paragraphs at a time over the next coming weeks, and then we have another one that was written a few years later, called "Advice to People Called Methodists." Comes after a time when we finally embraced the name. You know, John Wesley just embrace the branding, right? If that's what people are going to call you, then that's what we're going to call ourselves. So that will be what is on offer next. But look for a few more of these in the future as we continue to look through the nature, design, and general rules of our United Societies. Thanks for joining.